Welcome back to the Stratomatic Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Ryder. On the phone with me is Mr. Glenn Guzzo. I figure with baseball opening day coming up, Stratomatic's opening day coming up, February 8th, I really wanted to get Glenn on to talk a little baseball for you so everyone could get their fix. Glenn, welcome back to the podcast. You are one of my most favorite guests to have on here. We have some great conversations, and I really appreciate your time. Thanks, buddy.
Well, it's high praise. It's always a joy to do it. I enjoy the questions that you pose to the community, and I think you're performing a great service.
Thanks, bud. Thanks. Okay. The last time we talked about football ratings. And one of the things that you had said in that podcast, by the way, if you want to listen to it, go to stratomatic.com and search for the podcast archives. You had said that football ratings tend to fluctuate more than baseball ratings. Why is that so?
Well, in football, everything is more volatile because everything is more compact. You know, in any statistical-based thing, the smaller the sample, the more volatile the result. So with football, you have shorter careers, you have a shorter season, and you have NFL teams playing nothing like a balanced schedule. In baseball, of course, you're playing 10 times the amount of games every year. Careers tend to last a great deal longer for most players, so that you really can see the development of those players over time. And finally, of course, you have the much more balanced schedule, so that, I mean, in the NFL, every team does not play every other team. And so even in your Pro Bowl voting, you see the oddities there because you got players voting on guys they didn't even play against.
All right. In your book, Stratomatic Fanatics, you describe what I call as the conclave. It's a group of guys from Stratomatic that get together and they discuss baseball ratings. And they go through and they assign players ratings. And often there are some very heated discussions. I highly recommend listeners to go buy that book, Stratomatic Fanatics. It's a phenomenal read. You get some really great insight into the inner workings, and you also hear a number of really cool stories about how Stratomatic came about. But specifically to what we're talking about today, I want you to describe the last conclave meeting, going over these ratings. Were there any players that were highly debated more than others?
Oh, yes, there always are. You know, the process has changed slightly since I got involved in the ratings. When Stratomatic Fanatics was written, I was the first outsider ever allowed in, and of course it was
really
for the purpose of the book. Yeah. Hal Richmond had really guarded that, and for good reason. And so I was a fly on the wall during that one, and the goal of my book was to take readers places they hadn't been, and that was certainly going to be one of them. It was a highlight. Now that I'm doing ratings, it has changed somewhat in that I start off the process by compiling a spreadsheet that says, okay, for every player we've got here, now we're talking about every position player who appeared in the major leagues, so we're talking about a whole lot of guys, I've got about 10 different criteria laid out in a spreadsheet just for their running rating, and about another 10 pieces of criteria laid out for their fielding rating. And
that's a whole lot of data.
It's a lot of data. It takes me weeks to compile. But then what you call the conclave and what the Stratomatic personnel calls the clatch ends up being a two-day process, one day for the American League and one day for the National, which we spend pretty much the whole day talking about these players. And I present the recommended ratings, which, in addition to all those criteria I just mentioned, although I haven't been very specific, I also have to look at the integrity, what I call the integrity of the ratings within each team. Mm-hmm. Is this guy the best fielder on his team? Does our rating reflect that? Was the infield defense weak on this team? Do the ratings reflect that? But also across the set. You know, gee, this guy's a two. Well, who are the other twos? who are the threes, who are the ones, is the two really about right for this guy? And to that extent, there is also a consideration about, well, how many ones, how many twos, how many threes, how many fours should be in the set. And we have some parameters we use that I can't disclose, but mm-hmm. We're looking for certain numbers across the set. It can vary, and it does vary from year to year, but not dramatically. So there are many, many players who are borderline cases because of all those different conflicting considerations. Some guys are very clearly twos, there's no doubt about it, or a one, or a four, or even a five. But a lot of guys are borderline 3-4, borderline 2-3, borderline 1-2. And those guys get a lot of discussion.
Who were a couple of the guys that you remember specifically having a conversation
year,
like
this
that?
This year it seemed like our longest conversations were about shortstops. And in a way, that's kind of surprising because shortstops handle a lot of balls. You get a pretty good idea about these guys. Starting shortstops are not very often fours if they played all season. So, you know, you've got a tighter range of ratings that you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
There, I mean, I can't think of a single starting shortstop who's there about a five. So, you know, you're mostly talking about, is this guy a one, two, or three?
Mm-hmm.
There are some guys who are fours, but those guys kind of stand out. Now, this year, one of the guys was Stephen Drew. He spent the first part of the season on the DL, a long stretch of the season on the DL after breaking his leg. And he comes back, and he plays okay for Arizona, but he's still showing some rust from the long layoff.
Mm-hmm.
Then he gets traded to Oakland. Now he gets traded from a non-contending team to a contending team. He plays every day for Oakland. By all accounts, he plays very well for Oakland. In fact, he displaces at shortstop a very good defensive shortstop, Cliff Pennington. So, ordinarily, a guy gets the same range rating in one league as the other if he's a two-league player.
Mm-hmm.
But on very rare occasions, we've made the exception. And this year, as a consequence of the discussion in the clutch, he got separate ratings. He got a 3 for Arizona, and he got a 2 for Oakland. Took us a long time to get to that point.
Interesting.
Another guy was Asdrubal Cabrera, the Cleveland shortstop. Now, people who watch ESPN, and that's the way they see Cabrera most often, would probably tell you, this guy's a human highlight film.
Yeah.
He's making all these barehanded plays. He's athletic. He's got a good arm. Best player on the team. We have some reading notes on him that talks about him that way. We have, Baseball America called him the number 2 shortstop in the American League. On the other hand, we have a very respected scout who sees all the Cleveland games who says, Cabrera's a 3 this year. And the advanced statistical metrics, which is part of what we use, says Cabrera's a 3 this year. So now we've got, he was a 2 last year
mm-hmm.
for us. And so now we're saying, well, you know, do we have enough here to change this guy? And we had to go round and round on that one before finally deciding he should keep his 2. But that was a tough call.
Hmm.
Another example is Mike Aviles from Boston. Here's a guy who had not played a lot of shortstop in his career. When he played it pretty badly for Kansas City. He was better at second base. But they've moved him all around because he's not gifted defensively anywhere. So Boston decides he's our everyday shortstop. Well, Boston's had some pretty bad fielders at shortstop before, so that's not particularly revealing. But we're getting reports that Aviles fielded really well this year, and there was consideration about whether he should be a 2. Well, that's a heck of a jump at that kind of a key position.
Mm-hmm.
From a guy to go from a 4 to a 2 based on one good season after a career of playing more like a 4. And this consideration was complicated by we had multiple scouts for Boston.
Mm-hmm.
scouts disagree, as they did in this case. One of them had a two, one of them had a three. We tend to look at, okay, how is this scout's ratings across the board for his team? Does he seem to be bullish? Optimistic? We have a history with the scout of overrating players. Does this one appear to be overly tough? You know, Boston didn't play that well last year. They're a last-place team in the division. You could imagine certain eyewitnesses being down on the team generally. We got to think about these things, and we have information that's clashing with each other. In this case, it was made even worse because the scout, who's usually the most optimistic about the ratings he recommends for Boston, was the one who gave him a three. And the scout who's a little bit tougher is the one who gave him a two. So I said, well, that wasn't much help. Okay. The advanced metrics thought Mike Avili is one of the best shortstops in the whole American League.
Wow.
And we knew that wasn't right. So, you know, we went round and round. It wasn't helped by the fact that Avili didn't hit much. He's usually a good hitter.
Yeah.
So now he plays 500 at bats. He didn't hit that much. You got to figure, well, he must have earned his keep of the field. But we had a lot of round and round on this, and it was just too much for the group to say, we're going to jump a guy who has always played badly at short to a two at short until he demonstrates more consistency at the position. He ended up a three. So that's the kind of debate that goes on, and I have to say that the last year's rating means a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we start with that and say, okay, what has changed about this guy? Is there a reason to change his rating? He played the position a whole lot more now, and we have a better handle on him. Did he play hurt?
Mm-hmm.
Is he coming back from an injury? I mean, is he healthy now after being hurt last year? Is he playing in a different, in the case of perhaps an outfielder, is he playing in a different park that is more friendly to outfielders or tougher for outfielders, more challenging? We have to consider those things.
Mm-hmm.
There are guys who lose weight, work out, spend a lot more time on their defense. You know, a Pablo Sandoval, when he balloons, his defense is affected. When he loses weight, his defense improves. You
mm-hmm.
know, we got to watch out for those things with a guy like that rather than just going with last year's rating. And so there are quite a few considerations here. And whenever we have a trusted source that ends up as an outlier, maybe we've got a profile that across the board says 2, 2, 2, 2, and then suddenly there's a 4 in there. You go, whoa. And you say, well, okay, where's this 4 coming from? Oh, it's coming from somebody who's usually very reliable. Uh-oh. You know, let's look deeper.
Hmm.
And so the conversation gets into that. What do you think, guys? You know, what have you heard? What do you know? What are their indicators? What do we want to give the most weight to here? And so sometimes we have to go against the recommendation of a trusted source because we have other trusted sources that really just outweigh it. And so, you know, things like defense aren't just purely objective. It's a subjective rating. But in Stratomatic's case, we try to arrive at it by an objective process. In the end, it's a subjective conclusion, but the process is objective. We have certain criteria that we use every year, and we have a pretty good idea of what weight to assign to.
Well, I think that kind of goes to when I was planning this podcast, I asked the community on the Strato Forum, who do you want to know about? What do you want to know? What do you want to ask Glenn? And what players do you want to ask about? And there was no response for any questions about any players. There was all, ask Glenn about this or ask Glenn about that, but no specific players. And in fact, one person chimed in and they said, well, that's what the Strato gods gave him. And I guess it just kind of shows that, you know, the process in which you guys put these ratings together is approved by the community. The community accepts it. It's time-tested. It's true. And the people that seem to, that I would think would have the greatest disagreements, chances are they probably own that player and have a little bit at stake in that player's rating.
Well, that's true. StratMac has a 50-year track record of doing this, and so people who have been with the hobby a long time, maybe 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 40 years, get a pretty good idea that StratMatic's defensive ratings have high credibility. You know, maybe it could vary with the individual. Maybe, 5 or 6 ratings raise your eyebrows or something. We do have a lot of tough calls. Can't be surprised if somebody disagrees with us now and then. But the process we use is more thorough than anybody. Certainly any of the competitors StratMatic has in the field. And we do more homework than most gamers are going to have time to do. So I think that, it's human nature that if you feel something's really out of whack, you complain about it. But that if you like what you see, you accept things, maybe you don't speak up as much or as loudly. So the absence of comments here would reflect favorably on our process, I think.
Now, in the prep that I did going into this podcast, I had asked you specifically if there were any players that you wanted to talk about. And there were two in particular that you had brought up, Andrelton Simmons and Freddie Galvis. Both of them got ones at middle infield positions, even though they had only 2 months of major league experience. And you told me that this is unheard of. Why? Why'd you guys give them ones with that little experience and break this kind of ground?
Well, I will tell you that Simmons involved a lot of discussion for that very point. And then once we decided Simmons should get the one, it was really the same discussion for Galvis, and so the conversation for him was much shorter. Stratomatic has been reluctant to give ones to rookies at key defensive positions unless that player clearly is a one, a Kirby Puckett, that kind of a Panazzi Smith,
yeah,
somebody like that, all right? But and usually that requires that the player has played all year and shown that he's really got it. It wasn't just a hot streak. This year, everything we had on Simmons said this guy was a one. One of the things we look at is John DeJuan's fielding Bible. Now, we use a combination of statistical sources that give us a overall statistical rating for this guy, which then is put into the mix with the scout ratings and the reading ratings and the other considerations we use. But in DeJuan's, in the Fielding Bible's case, Simmons, extraordinarily, even having played only 2 months of position, had by far the most runs saved of any shortstop in the major leagues. That was so off the charts that we had to give that extra weight. And in the end, I was the one saying, are we sure? Are we sure you want to give a guy who's only played 2 months a one? StratMatic's never done this, and let alone doing it at the most important defensive position in the game. Are you sure you want to do this? So the question kept coming back, throwing it back. How did he field? I said he was a one. He fielded like a one. But we want to break this new ground. And I think it's a credit to Hal Richman and to others of the game company if they're willing to say, look, just because we haven't done it before doesn't mean it can't be done, or doesn't mean it shouldn't be done. And if you look at the evolution of StratMatic's games over time, you will see many, many improvements, new features, new ratings, and so forth. StratMatic has always been willing to make the changes that will make the game more realistic, which I think is another part of its credibility, and how a game company or any company can survive and thrive for 50 years. So, finally, after a very long conversation about Simmons, he was a one. Freddie Galvis was really in Simmons' category. Here's a guy who, as a rookie, played absolutely brilliantly defensively. He's a natural shortstop who was put at second base, and everything about him was raved. And so he'd only played 2 months before he was suspended for 50 games for PEDs.
Yeah.
Even though he couldn't hit, but he then needed to be a one too. So we got two guys who are breaking the mold here.
Hmm. All right. I pose the question out there to the community. What do you want to ask Glenn? And so I got a few questions here that I'm going to ask you. First off was from Polanyan. I hope I got that right. Also, he's asking, I'm organizing a face-to-face tourney, and I'm wondering if Glenn has ever encountered pitfalls that a tourney organizing newbie could avoid before the event. Glenn, do you have any advice for Polanyan?
Sure. Some of that advice comes from my experience with the Star Tournament and my knowledge of the Star Tournament's evolution over years. And I would say the very first thing any tournament organizer needs to be sure of is to make sure the rules are very clear and communicated well in advance. You don't want a situation where somebody thinks they're playing under a certain set of rules and build the team accordingly, and only to find out that what they assumed isn't true because it wasn't covered in the explanation.
Hmm.
So first of all, whatever it is you're doing, you know, whether it's your homemade rules or whether it's the absolute game company rules or some combination of the two, make that very, very clear. I would also make clear how the tournament's going to be run. You're going to play approximately as many games. Here's how opponents are going to be decided. There's going to be a draft. The draft's going to be this time of day, that kind of thing, so people can come there prepared to the best of their ability and make good use of their time, and there won't be a sense of chaos. So organization, literally, is the key to a good tournament. Secondly, I think you want to do everything you can to encourage good sportsmanship, including establishing that there will be penalties for people who aren't good sports. And that can cover language, it can cover demonstrations of unhappiness. You know, people who play Strat-O-Matic are a competitive group. And when our team is embarrassing us in front of strangers and friends, it will try the most patient person's virtues. And so I think that's the other thing you want to establish, that in order to make this as pleasant an experience as possible for winners and losers, that bad behavior is not going to be tolerated. And so what those penalties are going to be for bad behavior, you know, probably need to be spelled out as well.
Organization, organization, organization.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, I think, you know, when it comes down to what teams you're going to use, what teams you're going to draft from, the eligibility cutoffs for players, those are all important things. I think if you want to something as close to an even playing field as possible when you start, you want to eliminate what I call the ringer cards. You know, guys who got 100 at-bats or fewer or something like that have these astronomically good cards because they had 376 or one side of their card is just way too good. Unless you want those guys to dominate your tournament, you know, it's probably better to take a tip from the Star Tournament and say, you know, we're only going to use batters who have had 300 at-bats or pitchers who have only had this many starts or this many innings. I think a very, very important rule for any tournament, any league, as important as you can get in terms of usage, is the rules about using relief pitchers. That can be easily abused if the rules aren't written tightly so that everybody is very clear on the limitations of that. Relievers are going to have the most extreme cards because they pitch the fewest innings. And, of course, in a draft, nobody's picking the bums, so you're going to have these great relievers, and you have to decide how much they can pitch on how often they can pitch. Do you want to be able to pitch every day? That's not very realistic. Do you want to be able to pitch a certain number of innings and confine it to that? I mean, you need to decide how that's going to be. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but you need to be very clear about that. It's certainly going to affect the way people draft. And once they built their team, they don't want to find out later that, oh, I didn't understand you couldn't do that. So that'd be my first start. Since I don't know much about his tournament, You know, how many teams, how many people, all that kind of stuff. It's hard to be extra specific, but I'd start there.
All right. John Bark asked the question, why have you chosen Stratomatic's game over other stat-driven games that are out there on the market? Now, when I talked to you beforehand, you told me an interesting fact that you are somewhat of a collector.
I am a collector. You know, throughout the 60s and 70s, 80s especially, I was buying just about every game out there that rated real players. I thought I might do a book. I thought I was going to do some research. At least I wanted to be able to compare games. So for games that rate real players, I've got more than 150 of those games, all different brands. I don't have every one that's ever been made. I've been able to look at some websites or some product descriptions and decide, not this one. But I've enjoyed a lot of different games. I would say most of the games I have merit to them. Some are really quite good. Others are pretty bad. But the fact is, I keep coming back to Stratomatic. And I always have. I started playing Stratomatic after I'd already played a couple of other games. Started in the early 60s. And then, since then, I've sampled all these other games, sometimes played a heck of a lot of them, but Stratomatic has never left my tabletop in the cards and dice area, and or in the computer area. And I'll tell you why. I mean, I believe that Stratomatic has the very best combination of playability, realism, feel like you're really playing the sport as the way the sport is played, and third, statistical accuracy. Combining those three is what makes the difference. You can find a game out there that's every bit as precise statistically as Stratomatic, but gets there in a way that's very cumbersome to play, is more labor than enjoyment, and doesn't feel like you're really playing a game or playing a sport. You're merely going through a mathematical exercise of number checks. You can find a game out there. You can find a lot of games out there that play very swiftly and simply. And, boy, you can play them right out of the box. They're so easy. But, boy, they fall way short on the statistical accuracy. They get to their playability by compromising in big ways. And you can just say, well, you know, that's not the way pitchers are rated. That's not the way defense works. Stratomatic's base running system is far superior. Their defense superior, their pitching superior, all of those things are superior. And so when you combine the three, I just don't think Stratomatic has a superior really in any of these sports.
Very cool. Hey Blue, this is the last question. Hey Blue asked, he'd like to know what changes in the organization have taken place since you published Stratomatic Fanatics. If you were going to write a new chapter or epilogue to the book today, what would be included in it?
Well, I don't think the epilogue is ready to be written. I think there's a lot of change going on in the game company behind the scenes that is yet to play out, and the way it plays out is going to make for an interesting story. But if I was under the gun, if my publisher was saying, look, we need to get out a new edition of this book, we think we can sell thousands more if we do, and we need it done by June,
yeah,
you know, I would start by saying, take a look at the electronic evolution of the game company. Since Stratomatic Fanatics came out, the website has been totally revamped. The company has hired for the first time a full-time marketing person who does internet marketing, who builds ads that look extremely attractive, that gets the company's name out in a lot of places. Now the baseball online game that had been on the Sporting News site for so long is now on the Stratomatic site. That's less than a year old, and that process, and we have a lot more to learn about how well that's going to work, but that can be a game changer for the company and for its customers. Those things and more are probably the place where I'd pick up where the story left off.
Awesome. Well, we've got a few more questions, Glenn, but time is running out. Would you be willing to come back in the future to take some more questions?
Just say when.
Awesome. Thanks, Glenn. I appreciate your time. Again, go to Stratomatic.com and order Glenn's book, Stratomatic Fanatics. I absolutely love it. The most fascinating part of that book is talking about the Klatch. By the way, where did the name the Klatch come from? I call it the Conclave, but it's called the
Klatch. I think that's Hal Richman's term, and derivative is probably a coffee klatch. Although the length of the meeting in all the years I've been aware of it means you're going to drink a whole lot of coffee and you're going to need some meals.
How long does it normally last?
Oh, one league can take 8 hours. You know, and the next day or the day after that, the other league will take another 8 hours. Yeah, unless we're really fast, unless there's just far less to debate. It's an all-day process.
That's awesome.
And that's after the weeks of work that I do in advance of it.
Yeah.
It's the longest part of the new rating process, the card-making process, is the work up to and including the Klatch. After that, there are many, many steps that take months to complete, but that's the longest single part of it right there.
Awesome. Well, you can go get the book, Stratomatic Fanatics, at stratomatic.com. And Glenn, thanks for being on, buddy.
Thanks. See you next time.
And in reference to Stratomatic Baseball Online, the game that Glenn was just talking about, you can go on to Stratomatic.com and find out more. For a limited time, right now, between now and March 1st, if you spend $35 on Stratomatic.com, you can get a free game credit to do Stratomatic Baseball Online. Basically, it's a fantasy-style online simulation, much like Strato did at Sporting News a while ago. And three games are simmed every day, so you go in and you make your tweaks, you get reports, analyze, and if you win, you get a free credit to play again. Kind of cool. So spend $35, you get a free credit, go try it on the website. It's awesome. Also on Stratomatic.com, they have a cool ringer t-shirt. It's actually kind of cool. It's got the old pitcher that was on the original box on the front, and then on the back it says Stratomatic. I like ringer t-shirts. You know, the t-shirts with the little ring that's colored differently along the collar and along the sleeves. I love those shirts. I'm a geek for those things. Opening day, February 8th. If you can make it, go out there. Go out to Glenhead, have some fun, say hi to everyone. It's a great opportunity to go meet people and express how much you love the game and just kind of see the headquarters. I know I want to go out there. And if you are ordering baseball this year, 1938 and 1961 are coming out as super advanced seasons. 1938 was Lou Gehrig's last year. Hank Greenberg hit 58 home runs for the Tigers. Good season to get. 1961, Roger Maris obviously hit his 61 home runs, but you also got Mickey Mantle with his 54. In all, 19 Hall of Famers in their prime. Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Roberto Clemente, Frank Robinson. 29 Hall of Famers entirely in this set. So 1961 is a very, very cool year to get. And, of course, you have the 2013 version of the Stratomatic game. The computer version has additional seasons you can get, like 1891, which kind of fills out all 137 Major League seasons from 1876 through 2012. So every Major League season is available. Also on computer, there's 1920, 31, and 42 Negro League seasons, as well as the 1973 Japanese Central and Pacific League season. Also, with the baseball computer game, there's 23 new features and improvements. Among them, a new feature called Game Replay. Watch an entire game replay before your eyes with the exciting new Game Replay feature. This is a really, really cool new feature, and one that I had I had talked to Bob Winberry a long time ago about possibly doing something like this for the football game. And so to see it in baseball only makes me cross my fingers and hope that it's coming to football even more, because I know as a league commissioner, I'd love to be able to kind of just watch how a game unfolded and maybe even replay a league championship I may have won. That would be pretty awesome. So go to Stratomatic.com to order the t-shirt, the game, cards. Check out baseball online. All of that at Stratomatic.com. This edition of the Stratomatic Podcast has been a Right Turn Media production. I'm your host, Steve Ryder. Thanking you all for listening. Tune in next time to the next Stratomatic Podcast.